I'd like to make a formal complaint to the city. Would you help? A man of your reputation would be a valuable witness. Clouchard looked buoyed by the prospect of being quoted. He sat up. Why, yes, of course. It would be my pleasure. Becker took out a small notepad and looked up. Okay, let's start with this morning. Tell me about the accident. The old man sighed. It was sad, really. The poor Asian fellow just collapsed. I tried to help him, but it was no use. You gave him CPR? Clouchard looked ashamed. I'm afraid I don't know how. I called an ambulance. Becker remembered the bluish bruises on Tancato's chest. Did the paramedics administer CPR? Heavens, no, Clouchard laughed. No reason to whip a dead horse. The fellow was long gone by the time the ambulance got there. They checked his pulse and carted him off, leaving me with that horrific policeman. That's strange, Becker thought, wondering where the bruise had come from. He pushed it from his mind and got to the matter at hand. What about the ring? He said as nonchalantly as possible. Clouchard looked surprised. The lieutenant told you about the ring? Yes, he did. Clouchard seemed amazed. Really? I didn't think he believed my story. He was so rude, as if he thought I were lying. But my story was accurate, of course. I pride myself on accuracy. Where is the ring? Becker pressed. Clouchard didn't seem to hear. He was glassy-eyed, staring into space. Strange piece, really. All those letters looked like no language I'd ever seen. Japanese, maybe? Becker offered. Definitely not. So you got a good look at it? Heavens, yes. When I knelt down to help, the man kept pushing his fingers in my face. He wanted to give me the ring. It was most bizarre. Horrible, really. His hands were quite dreadful. And that's when you took the ring? Clouchard went wide-eyed. That's what the officer told you? That I took the ring? Becker shifted uneasily. Clouchard exploded. I knew he wasn't listening. That's how rumors get started. I told him the Jap fellow gave away the ring, but not to me. There's no way I would take anything from a dying man. My heavens, the thought of it! Becker sensed trouble. So you don't have the ring? Heavens, no! A dull ache crept through the pit of his stomach. Then who has it? Clouchard glared at Becker indignantly. The German! The German has it! Becker felt like the floor had been pulled out from under him. German? What German? The German in the park! I told the officer about him. I refused the ring, but the fascist swine accepted it. Becker set down his pen and paper. The charade was over. This was trouble. So a German has the ring? Indeed. Where did he go? No idea. I ran to call the police. When I got back, he was gone. Do you know who he was? Some tourist. Are you sure? My life is tourists, Clouchard snapped. I know one when I see one. He and his lady friend were out strolling the park. Becker was more and more confused every moment. Lady friend? There was somebody with the German. Clouchard nodded. An escort. Gorgeous redhead. Mon Dieu, beautiful. An escort? Becker was stunned. As in, a prostitute? Clouchard grimaced. Yes, if you must use a vulgar term. But the officer said nothing about... Of course not. I never mentioned the escort. Clouchard dismissed Becker with a patronizing wave of his good hand. They aren't criminals. It's absurd that they're harassed like common thieves. Becker was still in a mild state of shock. Was there anyone else there? No, just the three of us. It was hot. And you're positive the woman was a prostitute? Absolutely. No woman that beautiful would be with a man like that unless she were well paid. Mon Dieu, He was fat, fat, fat. A loudmouthed, overweight, obnoxious German. Clouchard winced momentarily as he shifted his weight, but he ignored the pain and plowed on. This man was a beast. 300 pounds at least. He locked onto that poor dear like she was about to run away. Not that I'd blame her. I mean, really. Hands all over her. Bragged that he had her all weekend for $300. He's the one who should have dropped dead, not that poor Asian fellow. Clouchard came up for air, and Becker jumped in. Did you get his name? Clouchard thought for a moment and then shook his head. No idea. He winced in pain again and settled slowly back into his pillows. Becker sighed. The ring had just evaporated before his eyes. Commander Strathmore was not going to be happy. Clouchard dabbed at his forehead. His burst of enthusiasm had taken its toll. He suddenly looked ill. Becker tried another approach. Mr. Clouchard, I'd like to get a statement from the German and his escort as well. Do you have any idea where they were staying? Clouchard closed his eyes, his strength fading. His breathing grew shallow. Anything at all? Becker pressed. The escort's name. There was a long silence. Clouchard rubbed his right temple. He was suddenly looking pale. Well, no. I don't believe... His voice was shaky. Becker leaned toward him. Are you all right? Clouchard nodded lightly. Yes, fine. Just a little... The excitement, maybe. He trailed off. Think, Mr. Clouchard, Becker urged quietly. It's important. Clouchard winced. I don't know. The man kept calling her... He closed his eyes and groaned. What was her name? I really don't recall. Clouchard was fading fast. Think... Becker prodded. It's important that the consular file be as complete as possible. I'll need to support your story with statements from the other witnesses. Any information you can give me to help locate them. But Clouchard was not listening. He was dabbing his forehead with the sheet. I'm sorry. Perhaps tomorrow... He looked nauseated. Mr. Clouchard, it's important you remember this now. Becker suddenly realized he was speaking too loudly. People on nearby cots were still sitting up watching what was going on. On the far side of the room, a nurse appeared through the double doors and strode briskly toward him. Anything at all? Becker pressed urgently. The German called the woman... Becker lightly shook Clouchard, trying to bring him back. Clouchard's eyes flickered momentarily. Her name... Stay with me, old fella. Do. Clouchard's eyes closed again. The nurse was closing in. She looked furious. Do? Becker shook Clouchard's arm. The old man groaned. He called her. Clouchard was mumbling now, barely audible. The nurse was less than 10 feet away, yelling at Becker in angry Spanish. Becker heard nothing. His eyes were fixed on the old man's lips. He shook Clouchard one last time as the nurse bore down on him. The nurse grabbed David Becker's shoulder. She pulled him to his feet, just as Clouchard's lips parted. The single word leaving the old man's mouth was not actually spoken. It was softly sighed, like a distant, sensual remembrance. Dewdrop. The scolding grasp yanked Becker away. Dewdrop? Becker wondered. What the hell kind of a name is Dewdrop? He spun away from the nurse and turned one last time to Clouchard. Dewdrop, are you sure? But Pierre Clouchard was fast asleep. Chapter 23 Susan sat alone in the plush surroundings of Node 3. She nursed a lemon-mist herb tea and awaited the return of her tracer. As senior cryptographer, Susan enjoyed the terminal with the best view. It was on the back side of the ring of computers and faced the crypto floor. From this spot, Susan could oversee all of Node 3. She could also see on the other side of the one-way glass, Translator standing dead center of the crypto floor. Susan checked the clock. She had been waiting almost an hour. American Remailers Anonymous was apparently taking their time forwarding North Dakota's mail. She sighed heavily. Despite her efforts to forget her morning conversation with David, the words played over and over in her head. She knew she'd been hard on him. She prayed he was okay in Spain. Her thoughts were jarred by the loud hiss of the glass doors. She looked up and groaned. Cryptographer Greg Hale stood in the opening. Greg Hale was tall and muscular, with thick blonde hair and a deep cleft chin. He was loud, thick-fleshed, and perpetually overdressed. His fellow cryptographers had nicknamed him Halite, after the mineral. Hale had always assumed it referred to some rare gem, paralleling his unrivaled intellect and rock-hard physique. Had his ego permitted him to consult an encyclopedia, he would have discovered it was nothing more than the salty residue left behind when oceans dried up. Like all NSA cryptographers, Hale made a solid salary. However, he had a hard time keeping that fact to himself. He drove a white Lotus with a moonroof and a deafening subwoofer system. He was a gadget junkie, and his car was a showpiece. He'd installed a global positioning computer system, voice-activated door locks, a 5-point radar jammer, and a cellular fax phone so he'd never be out of touch with his message services. His vanity plate read Megabyte and was framed in violet neon. Greg Hale had been rescued from a childhood of petty crime by the U.S. Marine Corps. It was there that he learned about computers. He was one of the best programmers the Marines had ever seen, well on his way to a distinguished military career. But 2 days before the completion of his third tour of duty, his future suddenly changed. Hale accidentally killed a fellow Marine in a drunken brawl. The Korean art of self-defense, Taekwondo, proved more deadly than defensive. He was promptly relieved of his duty. After serving a brief prison term, Halite began looking for work in the private sector as a programmer. He was always upfront about the incident in the Marines, and he courted prospective employers by offering a month's work without pay to prove his worth. He had no shortage of takers, and once they found out what he could do with a computer, they never wanted to let him go. As his computer expertise grew, Hale began making internet connections all over the world. He was one of the new breed of cyber freaks with email friends in every nation, moving in and out of seedy electronic bulletin boards and European chat groups. He'd been fired by 2 different employers for using their business accounts to upload pornographic photos to some of his friends. "What are you doing here?" Hale demanded, stopping in the doorway and staring at Susan. He'd obviously expected to have Node 3 to himself today. Susan forced herself to stay cool. "It's Saturday, Greg. I could ask you the same question." But Susan knew what Hale was doing there. He was the consummate computer addict. Despite the Saturday rule, he often slipped into crypto on weekends to use the NSA's unrivaled computing power to run new programs he was working on. "Just wanted to retweak a few lines and check my email," Hale said. He eyed her curiously. "What was it you said you're doing here?" "I didn't," Susan replied. Hale arched a surprised eyebrow. "No reason to be coy. We have no secrets here in Node 3, remember? All for one and one for all." Susan sipped her lemon mist and ignored him. Hale shrugged and strode toward the Node 3 pantry. The pantry was always his first stop. As Hale crossed the room, he sighed heavily and made a point of ogling Susan's legs stretched out beneath her terminal. Susan, without looking up, retracted her legs and kept working. Hale smirked. Susan had gotten used to Hale hitting on her. His favorite line was something about interfacing to check the compatibility of their hardware. It turned Susan's stomach. She was proud to complain to Strathmore about Hale. It was far easier just to ignore him. Hale approached the Node 3 pantry and pulled open the lattice doors like a bull. He slid a Tupperware container of tofu out of the fridge